Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, along with Pauly Howard, we are live in downtown Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino here on a Tuesday. Big three-hour program lined up for you as always. On the program today, David Baker, professional poker player, former Westgate Super Contest winner, super high on the Broncos and Bo Nix this year and the Seahawks. We got to get his thoughts on what he thinks now with no Nix for the rest of the year. Chad Andrus also covers the team. He'll join us talking about AFC title game a little bit later on. Derek Stevens, early money, title game Sunday, how the bettors did last night on the national title game. Big news in the NBA today. Busy card tonight in college basketball. We'll hit it all. And we'll go over college football, Pauly, and what took place last night in the national title game. And looking forward next year to early odds to win it all a season from now. That started off as a snooze fest. And a bad football game for the first half. But, you know, we were on the air yesterday making the case, and bettors, you know, took that down to 7.5, and they were right, grabbing Miami before the game. Thought it could be a close game, and the second half turned out to be a doozy. So congrats on everybody who was on Miami for the game, but also, more importantly, like Indiana future tickets. Awesome job if anybody had like 100, 75, 60, whatever that number was. And if you were able to get creative on the other side when you had Miami tickets to do something with Indiana last night and maybe parlay them with something else.
Yeah, good result for the books that it falls 6, because you'd think you'll lay it with Indiana and take Miami money line. How they bet it also like they usually do with Super Bowls. I thought they were going to blow them out, and it looked like it was going to be a blowout until the Fletcher touchdown. Is, you know, what happened in the first half and the what could have been for Miami, the mistakes, the interception, the face mask, the jumping off sides on 3rd and 14, the slow start, and, you know, maybe that was 3 or 6-0 at halftime, but it took them so long to get going, and then the offense couldn't be stopped as they finally saw some creativity. But you got to be sound in all three phases, and the block punt and the missed field goal did them in a hell of a game. Incredible story. Let's get going immediately on the movie. But certainly Miami had a great chance to win that game, and it reminded me of the finish with the Bears. I mean, you don't have to make that pass there. You have plenty of time, and we have miscommunication, much like Moore and Williams, that you shouldn't have miscommunication this late in the season as the wide receiver wasn't even looking for the ball, and the sharp angle, too, with the Miami angle, as they didn't offer him anything, and Allen in Indiana did, and he winds up in Indiana and has the interception.
Right. So, Miami had so many, like, forced errors, or unforced errors, I should say, last night in the game. Just, and that's, you know, as it's unfolding, you're like, there you go. This is what's going to happen with a Mario Cristobal coach team. And on the other side, they were buttoned up until they weren't, and I'll expand on that coming up in a little bit. But that face mask is just, that can't happen. The offsides, brutal. Also, I would say the decision to try to kick the field goal, just, come on, man, go for it right there.
Yeah,
Indiana's
good.
You're right. Use Fletcher. And by the way, there was a drive early on. I hated the play calling for Miami as well. After they held them to a field goal to make it 3-0, they come out and go pass, pass, sack. Never tried to get Fletcher going yet again. Had to punt it right back. Like early on. Come on, man. You knew Fletcher was going to be the biggest part of the game plan to maybe keep you in this thing. And you're ignoring him until, you know, that 57-yarder that he popped. And in the second half, he was outstanding as well. But I would also say this about Cignetti. Now, he's going to get praised up and down and has been for the last almost 24 hours. And certainly, like, he reached instant legendary status last night. He was far from perfect. And I thought actually kicking the field goal up to go up 27-21, huge mistake. Why do you call a timeout to run Mendoza on 4th down and 5 there and he scores the touchdown, but then you don't go forward again to put Miami out of their misery late and you settle for the field goal? Way too much time left, like 90 seconds. It's a 6-point game. They score a touchdown, kick the extra point. You lose. So he played to win and was so aggressive the entire year until it mattered the most in the final 2 minutes of the game. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Well, they felt they were going to pick it up no problem, though, because of what Miami showed on tape and what Miami showed prior to the timeout. They felt they were so confident they were going to pick it up, which is still a gutsy call. And as he said after the game, he had to knock over a linebacker to do that. But it may be a different ball game, 4th and 6, as the penalty was key on that drive too. But it worked out for him. And it was a lot of guts to go for it, not once, but twice. And one guy was aggressive and it paid off, and the other guy was conservative and he got beat. And I didn't think the kid was going to make the field goal from that distance as he struggled down the stretch. And it's still a tough kick to make, and you still had plenty of time as the clock was winding down before halftime. But the big mistake is the block punt with the rugby nonsense. He walked right into the block.
Yeah.
I mean, if he punts it regular, it's no problem. Mm-hmm. But he goes right into the guy and blocks it, and it was a piece of cake moving off to his right, which that also loomed large. So it could have been a Miami win, but too many mistakes and a great game, though, and a great finish. But that's tough if you're Miami. And like Beck said, it's going to haunt him for a long time.
So when you look at the juxtaposition here of the two coaches and how they approached the game last night, again, Cristobal electing to go for that long field goal before the half. No good. Instead of going for it on fourth and short. Cignetti, super aggressive on that drive that led to the Mendoza touchdown, going for it twice on fourth down. So it was a fourth and five at the Miami 37, and they picked up a 19-yard pass. Then it was a fourth and four on that touchdown run. Yeah. I think Cristobal punts on fourth and five at the 37, and he kicks the field goal at fourth and four at the Miami 12.
Yep. The other thing that was ridiculous, and they pointed it out several times, what was with the cushion in the first half? Just because you don't have Lucas?
Yeah.
They made it so easy. This guy could be the number one pick in the draft. You can't just get a 10-yard cushion and he's playing catch out there. That was silly what they were doing. And Herbstreit was stunned with what they were giving the Indiana wide receivers. It was ridiculous.
I thought Becker was phenomenal last night in the game.
There was a lot of talent on the field.
Yeah.
So much talent that my takeaway is the Raiders should trade down and take Bain. He's such a beast.
Miami on the edge.
Oh, my God. Cignetti's right. They couldn't protect him. And they did an incredible job getting after him. There were some questionable calls. I know a lot of people thought that should have been an ejection and a targeting, but that was a great job by Bain and the group, so much so that if I'm the Raiders and I need so much, if someone would make me a godfather offer, I'll just take Bain and move down.
I'd be fine with that. And by the way, again, get ready for this because I've heard it already, like, trying to pay attention to the draft. So many people are going to say, well, he's got too short of arms. Just it's nonsense that you're going to hear. Guy is absolutely a total stud. I would also say this in terms of a betting thing, because Cignetti is available to bet on in some of these prediction markets, like will he become the next head coach of a certain NFL job? He's locked in at 2033. He's making $11.5 million a year.
He said, I'm not an NFL guy.
Yeah, he seems like he's not an NFL guy. I would not be betting him in prediction markets right now.
You said it yesterday. Where have you been? This is unfortunate. An all-time coach, a phenomenal coaching job, but he's 64 years old. He started at Davidson in 1985. He was several stops quarterback wide receiver coach, 3 years at Bama. He didn't become a head coach until IUP, which he mentioned yesterday with Reese Davis after the game in 2011. Then he went to Elon and then James Madison, then Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what could have been? Yep. 64 years old. This star has just been sitting there the whole time.
A star is finally born.
Yeah, no one gave him the opportunity. No. Davidson, Rice, Temple, Pittsburgh, NC State. Didn't become a head coach till 2011. And Google me, I win.
Yeah, can you imagine what the narrative would be around him right now if he was 40 years old?
Oh, I can't, yeah.
They would run the sport for the next 20 years.
He'd probably go to the NFL.
Yeah, maybe.
Last 9-win season before Cignetti, 1967. Prior to this season, they had won 3 bowl games. Ever.
Ever.
They now won 3 in 18 days.
I wonder here, would Hoosiers fans trade what happened in the last 2 years with him for another national title in college basketball? Curious how they would answer that question.
I don't think you can top this. This is
so unbelievable that you really can't.
Yeah, and 16-0, which hasn't happened since that Yale team, loved in the 1890s. Yeah, right.
Sure. Also, don't forget this, by the way. It's 3 in a row for the Big Ten.
That's right. They run the sport.
3 different Big Ten teams, by the way.
Yep. You tell the SEC what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You run this sport. 3 different teams did it again. SEC couldn't even make the game again. Phenomenal job.
Look at the photo here, and some of this stuff was taken off last night during the game.
Yeah.
But here, and this is all over social media too for the radio audience, the photo of the first game of the attendance for Indiana's football game last year, Cignetti as the head coach. I mean, you could do a head count here. Not seriously, but there was what? I mean, how many empty seats are we talking about here?
Yeah.
That's 50% full, maybe?
Everyone was tailgating, they said.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm not going to kill you for that. There's no problem.
I said that yesterday.
You're exactly right. I saw this was all over social media before the game. I referenced it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
They had the most losses in the history of the sport. You're not going to be fired up for Florida International, whoever was coming to town, to start with Cignetti's first game.
Yep. And let's take you back to the opening press conference again. He takes the job. Here's a back and forth with a reporter that went viral and why so many people liked him.
When it comes to that culture, you were just talking about, meshing the recruits you're getting and some of the guys you kept. Where does that process start? I mean,
what do you mean? I don't get the question.
Well, when you recruit them, how do you sell your vision of your culture? I mean, what's the...
Who are you talking about? The high school guys, the transfers, who?
All of the above. I mean, how do you...
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
Did you look at the responses underneath that?
I did not.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get your ass kicked, and you're talking a big game now, pal, and all that. It goes back. Oh, it's so good now. You got to look at the responses.
I think that's like a fair question, though. Like it's Indiana. They've never won anything.
Yeah, the mixer. Right, sure.
Right.
Yeah, because I said that after they boat raced Oregon, because that's when they showed the five-star difference in players.
Yeah.
I go, what's going to happen when this guy gets the best of the best? Maybe he doesn't want them. Maybe, but that's going to be the scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
What if he can just pick all these guys that he wants now? And that's why they got the big news on Hoover too.
Yeah, and also Mark Cuban's going to be funding the program as much as they want.
Yeah,
to make it stay like this. Indiana national champs. My God, win lose up next, and I'll give you a team in action tonight that is winless over seven tries in this situation. Coming up here on Follow the Money, it's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Win Some, Lose Some is sponsored by The Sharp Plays.
Were you a winner last night?
Wow, winning.
Or was it a rough one?
Well, they can't all be winners, can they?
Loser! You're a loser!
Molly Howard recaps the night in sports betting in Win Some, Lose Some.
All right, some bombs. Indiana, 100-1. Longest preseason odds to win since 2010. Also, the first-time national champion, the first time that has happened to win a title in 29 years. But your big boy, I saw two of these. One for a dollar and one for 100. It was 600-1. It was Mendoza to win the Heisman and Indiana to win the title. And one guy won $60,000 on that. Now that is creative to put that up, but who the hell thought that would happen? And you could argue it's a ripoff with the price.
Right, because if you parlayed both of those, like what was Mendoza preseason to win the Heisman?
Oh, no kidding.
So you would have gotten 100-1 on Indiana and then tie that in with whatever he was to win the Heisman.
Yeah.
It was probably like 2,000-1.
It was a big price when Indiana Jets said, take a look at him. And the Oregon game, I don't even think it had happened. Or maybe it did happen.
I got to go back and look at the schedule. I know it was right. It was the day they played Illinois. Indiana Jet was saying, if you don't have Mendoza right now, he was still like 35-1 at that point. So you need to grab him right now.
Exact score, 125-1. Indiana wins between 1-6 plus 475. First touchdown, Nowakowski, 25-1. Defensive or special teams touchdown, plus 220. Too easy. Gave it to him. It just the guy walked right into, by luck, walked right into the block with the rugby crap. Miami, 14-2 to the under, first half and first quarter this year. What a run that was for the Hurricanes. Start slow, finish strong. Unleash hell defensively. Salah, Titans, 10-1 at some spots. That's a surprise. Suns from 6 up to 9.5, and the Mavericks plus 450 on the road. 12-point dogs in total control in the Garden as the fans booed the Knicks off the floor. Subscribe, be part of the team, VSiN.com. Our radio and podcast friends, you always want to see these tweets and videos. At Pauly Does Vegas on Instagram, send them in, we'll put you on. Love Huskies. I've had one before. They're phenomenal. This is a new one. You got to be kidding. He enters the house through the window and coming in by the sink.
Oh, my Lord.
By the sink. Come on. We had Iris. May she rest in peace. She would open doors and go on the loose time and time again, how smart huskies are. And they love to talk.
He opened up the window to get in.
Comes right in. You're putting paw in the sink. And then just goes down and no problem. Imagine seeing this maneuver. Incredible. It's one thing where I can open a door, no problem. But to come in, enter the house through the window as you're outside? Oh, that's incredible.
All right, I'm here to do the dishes. Get out of my way.
Yeah, that's right. To me, still, the best show of all time, Game of Thrones.
Ooh, okay.
I know it was a tough ending, but this is great. How about the real version of King's Landing, where that's at? They got a basketball court there on the side. Out of all places to expect to play, to shoot hoops and have a basketball court, right there in King's Landing.
It's my understanding that Jon Snow would go up there and dunk emphatically on like a 7-foot rim.
Wow, that's awesome. What a view. And to think right there, peekaboo. That is phenomenal.
Best show of all time, huh?
Oh, no doubt.
Oh,
absolutely.
No doubt.
Oh, I loved it. Oh, it was so good.
I come back Sopranos. I come back Breaking Bad. Both better in my opinion.
I love the cast. There were so many different characters and different, and how they would whack main characters
right away. I will say.
Nobody was safe in that show.
Great show. I hated the way the showrunners screwed it, though.
Yeah, they didn't know what they were doing.
They destroyed it.
They had no experience.
Yep.
And then they said HBO was the most expensive film school ever. How they said it. And once they got at
the Star Wars
ahead of the books, it was also over.
Yep.
You know, the guy couldn't finish the books, and then they had to take the lead and forget about it. Thunder. Under 233 and a half to 229 and a half. No good. And the Pacers from 10 down to 6.5. Last night at the national title game, the steak plate at the big, what, Tomahawk, big boy? I'm not surprised by it. $81. But that's going to feed a lot of people.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. I was thinking a lot more than that with the big boy.
Well, that'd be 150 out here.
Sure it is. Look at the size of that. It's like the knocks over Freddie Flintstone at the end of every episode. That's your big boy.
That's a bargain, $81.
And he's got a side piece, too. Got something to go with it. Yeah, $81. Excellent. Very good. Before the line moves, sharp plays is already there. January's isn't about volume. It's about precision. NFL playoffs are when limits rise, mistakes shrink, and timing matters more than ever. You're not going to outsmart billion-dollar books or full-time sharps on your own. With the sharp plays, you don't have to. Free reports, alerts, market-moving insights straight to your inbox or X feed. The Mr. Poison tweets every weekend. And Jeff and the crew been at it since 2011. Documented results, public logs, transparent receipts. Great in every sport. Check it out, sharpplays.com. Give them a follow, sharpplays.com. It is out here next year for all the marbles. And the title game is late January. We're really going deep into the schedule.
What's the date next year?
I think it's the 24th. You believe that?
It's too late, isn't it?
Yeah. But then again, we'll do this later, but look when the Super Bowl is.
Is it on Valentine's Day next year?
Yes.
It's actually, so the Super Bowl is on the 14th.
Correct. What a conundrum. What do you do? What a time to get a reservation at any restaurant you want. Who's going out to eat while the Super Bowl's on?
Oh, man.
And then how you do this if you're married? Saturday? You go Monday? Get ahead of that.
Boy, is that a bad move by the NFL? I'm only asking the question.
I don't think that. 25th, sorry. January 25th is the title game next year. This is crazy. Yeah. When we were growing up, it was all New Year's Day, and that's it.
No, that was it.
Now we're playing the national title January 25th next year.
Yeah, I was looking at, we'll do a little bit more of this a little bit later on. I was looking at odds for next year. They're up. Some books have them. Some don't at this point. But Indiana's 7-1. I would say be very careful looking for the next Indiana team because you're not going to get another Kurt Cignetti. This guy.
Oh, you disagree with what he said, huh?
What's that?
The sport has changed. Everyone has a chance. NIL money. If the resources are there and the university steps up, it can be done.
No.
It's a new world in college football, Cignetti.
That part I absolutely agree with. But how about the job that we have watched with this team the last 2 years now? They are buttoned up as well as any team that we can remember.
How about the fumble thing?
One lost fumble, and it was the opening game.
Come on.
That was it.
Yeah.
What was it, first time since 2004?
Yep.
A team went... So, like, I would say, like, if you put Cignetti on Oregon and remove Dan Lanning, okay, now Oregon can win the national title. Like, there's a huge difference there in coaching, in my opinion. and he would probably win the title like in a couple of years with their resources and talent. And
I think they're already promoting the game mid-October. So they play the Buckeyes at home. They get USC at home. And they go to Washington, Nebraska for their tough games. And there's not much non-conference. Yeah. So with that guy, I'll say they're going to go at least 10-2. And we'll see in the playoff. And then he's the best thing going right now.
Right. But also a team like Texas Tech, they're going to spend, and they are, and the portal's going really well for them. Some rankings have them already number one overall. Their schedule is super easy next year. They're 16-1. You don't want to lock up a 16-1 for a year from now.
Yeah.
Not going to do that. So I just don't know about those long shots coming in when you, like, but again, I...
Well, try to get ahead of it. Maybe we'll see if he can sniff something out here with Mensa. Duke is suing him.
Yeah.
Trying to prevent him to transfer. Word around the campfire is he's going to Miami.
Oh, that's
going to
be the spot.
Yeah, because the Miami backup transferred to East Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So you think he wants to go to Miami now, and then how could that change things? And maybe what happens with Ole Miss? Can Chambliss win this and get another year of eligibility?
Right.
As he took that to the courts.
I'll give you, here's one team. I think On3 ranks Louisville as right now as having the fourth best transfer portal. And they're 150-1. I mean, maybe that could be a team. And by the way, we're talking about the ACC.
Yeah.
James Franklin's killed it in the portal. They're 400-1. They have six road games. Some of them are tough. But if they were to go like 10-2 and an ACC title winner, they'd be in.
Well, I feel good for the committee, though, too. That team was so close to being left out, and they were one play away from winning the national title. And also some of the blame goes on the ACC with your stupid tiebreaker system. They couldn't even play in their own conference title game because of stupid tiebreakers. They almost won the national title but couldn't play in their conference title game because of four or five-way ties, whatever.
I still think they got it wrong, though. Overall, Notre Dame should have been in over Alabama and Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's fair.
We thought that on Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
By the way, here's the angle tonight in hockey. The Rangers, second night of a back-to-back so far on the year, 0-7 straight up. All seven games have gone under. They get the Kings tonight.
Very good, my friend.
Kings are laying in $1.75. They're all the way from like $1.75 to $1.90 range here.
Edmonton at home against the Devils. McDavid, 12 straight overs at home, 3.5 shots on goal.
Yeah.
Yep. Some of those he's cashing right away.
And you can actually find books, shots on goal in the first period.
Yeah, he's getting the damage done early in the first period. That's incredible.
All this micro betting now that's available.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You get lost on the betting apps looking for this stuff.
Yeah.
But, okay, he's trying to take charge now, huh? And when they need him, he's cranked it up like that before. Like, okay, enough of me trying to be Mr. Passer on the team and get people involved with the assists.
Yeah.
So.
And then we got to get Utah at home with the defenseman who's on 21-1 overrun.
Right. Up next, professional poker player, former Westgate Super Contest champion David Baker. He's on the program. He was higher on the Denver Broncos, and more specifically Bo Nix, than anybody I knew the entire season. So how does he feel about the team this week with Bo Nix's season-ending injury? We'll ask him coming up next.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
We'll get into Championship Sunday in the NFL here. We head out to the Progressive Guest Line. Professional poker player, former Westgate Super Contest champion, David Baker joins us here on a Tuesday. David, pleasure talking to you. Thanks for the time today. How are you?
Yeah, I always love talking with you guys. Always interesting, picking y'all's brains, coming from different environment than I am. In football, and let's cut it up.
Okay, so we got to begin with the AFC title game, and I said this before the commercial break. Like some of us here at the network, I had a Broncos win total over. Matt Eumanns was super high on the team to win the division, make the playoffs, etc. But none of us were as high on the Broncos as you were this year, in particular with Bo Nix, the quarterback. You thought that he was absolutely going to pop and shine this year, and I thought he looked really good against the Bills. Okay, then that news comes out, and it's just like, whoa, what? Are you serious? So what do you think of the drop-off now with this team going from Bo at quarterback to Jared Stidham?
Yeah, I appreciate starting out with Bo because, I've spent the last 2 days consuming content, nothing but content as the number one Bo Nix supporter and fan that I've seen is, I don't really feel like he got his due respect after this football game against the Bills. Everything is how, well, they would have lost if Josh Allen didn't make turnovers. Well, part of being a great quarterback is holding onto the football and making smart decisions, not taking sacks, not being careless with the ball. And Bo did that way better than Josh did. The throw that he made to Marvin Mims with 55 seconds left, if that play happens, 20 seconds later or something, and the Broncos just win the football game, and this is an all-time clutch moment. The throw he made to Lil Jordan Humphreys for the touchdown at the end of the first half, spectacular. So I think Bo deserves his respect before we move on to the AFC Championship game. So I just want to, he played the best of any quarterback this postseason so far. So onto the drop-off. I mean, as you can see in my background, it's all Auburn stuff here. So I'm a big Auburn fan. That's what started my love for Bo and Jared Stidham, mm-hmm. Ex-Auburn Tiger. So I've watched a lot of Jared Stidham football and kind of been a fan of his as well, as I am most Auburn players. And look, he's Sean Payton's hand-selected guy. Jared has had opportunities to go elsewhere, and he's stayed with Payton. Obviously, Payton sees things in him. There will be a drop-off. I mean, I think Bo's elite. If he's not elite, he's at least very, very, very good at this point in his career, and he runs the system great. But I do trust Stidham to have been working under Bo and with Sean for the last couple years, that he will be able to give them a chance to win. The offensive line is still great. The defensive line will still be able to create chaos and hopefully get them the ball back in positive field position. So I'm not writing off this Broncos team yet. There is definitely a drop-off, but I think Stidham can do enough with what he has to make this a game that the Broncos have a chance to win. And I trust Payton.
You do? Okay. And you might have Dobbins back as well. But what's your level of concern with the defense, though? After they had the bad game against Jacksonville, and they gave up so many points and yards to Buffalo, and a lot of times receivers were wide open.
Yeah, it's funny, this defense, because, somebody who's been heavily invested in the Broncos, I consume a ton of Broncos content, and obviously I watch every game and I watch it super close, and everybody is like, this defense is great. And then I continue to see them put up games like this, but I don't think that necessarily takes away from their greatness. They have great playmakers, but sometimes the game does get away from them. I mean, last year they had a great defense, and we saw that wonderful Cincinnati game near the end of the year where Burrow and Nix were just going back and forth. And then there have been a couple times this year where the defense has done that. That doesn't necessarily negate the fact that they have a defensive line that creates havoc. And sometimes when you have a defensive line that creates havoc and you get 68 sacks and you lead the NFL in sacks, sometimes that does lead to some big plays happening. And that's just kind of a part of it. I mean, if you're going to play style of football, whether it's offensively or defensively, where you take chances, I mean, you look at Josh Allen. Yes, Josh Allen makes the most ridiculous plays, but he also puts the ball in harm's way. Well, you could kind of say the same thing on the defensive front. I mean, the Broncos go for big plays. And, a lot of the points scored have been products of, almost getting there to the quarterback, Riley Moss committing PIs, mm-hmm. Just some big plays. So I don't necessarily think that it's an indictment on the defense. It's just kind of the style that they play. You see the same thing with the Brian Flores defense. You can find games where they look really bad and they put up a lot of numbers. But, that's just kind of how it goes. And I love Nick Bonito. He's been my favorite defensive player for, a good year and a half since I really discovered the Broncos and got on this Broncos train. And I kind of love the parts that are there for the Broncos. And they're going to be playing inspired ball. The stadium's going to be insane. And we saw that this Patriots offensive line is gettable. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously yep. the Texans are, elite, but they got to him a lot. But the Chargers, I wouldn't say the Chargers defense is any better than the Broncos, and they put a, they got to May a lot too. So I think this is a spot where the Broncos can win.
David Baker, our guest on the Progressive Guest Line, professional poker player. Also, his podcast is called Gamble Up. So overall, the look-ahead number was Denver -1.5. Then the Knicks injury happens. Some books opened up 6. Other books like Circa now sitting at 4.5. FanDuel, DraftKings at 5.5. It seems like a pretty big adjustment, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, the look-ahead was 1.5, but I'll be honest. I think that thing would have quickly gone to 2.5. I mean, sure. You saw – I think the books, from what I've been able to tell – the books kind of don't really think that people trust Denver, but when the money comes in, it always goes to Denver. I mean, we saw the same thing with Buffalo. They opened Buffalo as a favorite, and by kickoff, the Broncos were a good solid 1.5-point favorites. I think that the market thinks that the Bills are better than the Patriots. I mean, we saw that just a few weeks ago, and not much has changed. The Bills were favored in New England like 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So I think that if the Patriots are lined to be a worse team than the Bills, then this game had to get out to 2.5, especially the Broncos were really good. And I think the Patriots did show some holes. So I think this game would have gone off at 2.5 to 3. So it is significant movement, but at the same time, I understand the reason being that, you know, Bo did end some of the doubters. So if you can't say on one side that, hey, Bo was elite and ended some of the doubters, and then at the same time not dock him for not being in this football game.
Overall, what do you think of the Patriots?
I mean, I think the Patriots are a good team. But I also think that they have obviously – I mean, this isn't news, but they've obviously been a victim – not a victim, but a recipient of a very favorable schedule. And being at home, we don't know. Like, the jury is out on Drake May in a hostile environment versus a great defensive line. I mean, he did not look good against the Texans' defensive line. I mean, he did have some great passes, and that will be there for the Broncos too. Because if the rush doesn't get home, we're going to have guys one-on-one. So he's going to be – it's going to be possible that he might be able to make some of those throws, but on the road and at home, AFC championship game, it's a whole different animal. So I think the Patriots are good, but I think this is a little too much respect for the Patriots and a little disrespectful to Sean Payton. And yeah, there have been some late game things that I haven't agreed with Payton. There have been a couple of game management things, but you cannot diminish his game planning ability. He is able to game plan, and he knows Stidham better than anybody in the world. So I trust him to be able to put him in the right position to succeed. I don't know what the game plan is going to be, but I trust Sean to, make it a good one.
Okay. Very good. You cool to hang out for another 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, for sure.
Very good. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, David Baker. You can follow him on X. He's at AUDavidB. Went to Auburn, like he said.
Good points. Also, the takeaway, I had the same thing, the praise that Payton had immediately for him.
Right away.
The Stidham's the guy. He's going to be ready. Fine. He's ready for this moment. I know.
We talked about this yesterday. His first start, I believe, Raiders against a really good Niners defense, lit him up 3 or 4 years ago out here in Las Vegas, had more than 300 yards, I think 3 touchdowns in that game. So he looked really good in that spot. We'll continue here talking NFL. A bunch to get into still with David. He has futures on the Rams as well to win the NFC. What does he make of the matchup against the Seahawks this weekend? And a lot of poker players were involved in the 5 winning entries in Circus Survivor. What's the reason, and will it be a theme consistently moving forward as we continue here on VSiN? We continue talking National Football League here, Championship Sunday. David Baker's with us on the Progressive Guest Line, professional poker player. He and his partner won the Westgate Super Contest back in 2020, Also has a podcast called Gamble Up. Very good. On X at AU David B. We're also on the same page with the Rams. We have futures on this team. I have them to win the Super Bowl. I did not grab them to win the NFC. Did you bet one or both of those? And if you don't mind me asking, like, what number or numbers did you get on the Rams?
Yeah, I bet them to win the NFC. I bet them the day they signed Devonta Adams. I opened up my Circa account and it was 14-1. And I thought that was ridiculous. So I just hammered it for the max. And then every 5 minutes it would let me bet again. And I was like, I'm going to continue to bet this every time it'll let me until they either move the line or I run out of money in my account. So I managed to fire it four times. And then I stopped. I didn't bet to win the Super Bowl just because I felt like, so normally to bet to win the Super Bowl, it's twice as much as to win the league. Mm-hmm. And obviously I didn't see a Jared Stidham, you know, Drake May championship game. You thought you were going to get Mahomes or Allen or Lamar. And so I figured the Rams would probably be a dog in that situation. So might as well just take the NFC. It was 14-1 to win the NFC and 28-1 to win the Super Bowl. So I felt like that was the way to go. Obviously, I think the Super Bowl bet is better now because you'll be able to hedge off and even middle a much better spot, you know, than I will. I'm just either going to win or lose this week.
Okay. Well, what do you make of the matchup here? How afraid of you are you with that ticket going into Seattle and taking on a team that looks, their defense and special teams anyway, they look ridiculous right now?
Well, I have not been concerned this entire year. I felt super confident about the Rams as it was going and haven't hedged or even considered hedging. But I will say for the first time, I'm concerned. I'm gravely concerned. I may take money off. I may actually switch sides. That's the great thing about having a 14-1 ticket. You can kind of do what you want. I'm going to look at this game independent of that and decide what I want to do, what I think's going to happen. It is fun to sweat a team all year and then to kind of flip off of them at the end kind of stinks, but I may do it. I just really haven't decided. So I loved this Rams-Seahawks matchup for the Rams for most of the season. Mm-hmm. Chris Shula has dominated Sam Darnold. Chris Shula, the defensive coordinator for the Rams, if you remember correctly, last year against the Vikings in the NFC playoffs, Darnold put up his worst performance he's had since he was a Jet. And that was all because of Chris Shula design pressure. If you remember the first game in LA, Sam Darnold put up his worst game that he put up since that Minnesota game, Minnesota Rams game, all because of the pressure that Chris Shula had designed and the way that he attacked him. Through three quarters in the game in Seattle, you would say the same thing. But I'm very concerned that the end of that game gave Sam Darnold a little light and maybe a little vision into how to attack this. I have always been a Sam Darnold fan, so I don't know. I just really have to dig deep and see what I really think. And are we going to get the Chris Shula defense versus Sam Darnold that we got for 11 quarters, or are we going to get it for the last quarter? Because the Seattle team right now is a juggernaut, and the Rams have not played well since that fourth quarter of that game. Mm-hmm. For some reason, they just took the foot off the gas and they have not been able to find the gas pedal again.
You mentioned this on X while it was going on. A lot of poker players had some of the winning entries in Circa Survivor. What do you think that, why do you think that means moving forward? And do you think more players will join and why so many poker players had success this year?
Well, I mean, there's a multitude of reasons why that's the case. One, we also made up a large amount of the entries in the pool.
Okay.
There's a lot of poker players out there. There are a lot of people who claim to be poker players. A lot of poker players are gamblers. A lot of poker players are sports bettors. So we made up a large amount of the entries. So when that happens, you're probably going to get there a lot. Also, everybody kind of knows a poker player, and some of these entries may have glommed on to poker players at, you know, later stages or things like that. I mean, I know that I've been requested to kind of join entries or things like that later in the season. And so sometimes it doesn't really start out that way, but sometimes it ends that way. But I think ultimately it just comes down to the fact that poker players are very good at game theory and figuring out ways to beat games. And all Survivor is a game. But let's not act like this run out is always going to happen. There are a lot of runouts where Philadelphia beats the Bears on Thanksgiving. And these particular poker players go out, and a lot of other poker players happen to stay in, because there's a lot of poker players that also had the Eagles, but a lot more entries stay in, and a lot more people who aren't poker players stayed in, a lot more single entries stayed in. So I think we just, you know, reached the fact that just outcomes are going to occur. I mean, the year before, I don't think there were any poker players, or maybe there was one or two or something like that. And next year, it may be 20% of the winners are poker players, or it might be 80% again. But I don't think it's necessarily like an indictment on the contest or things like that. It's just kind of, you know, poker players also, they have a lot of friends that similarly think the way that they do. So having a group of people to discuss rather than just dealing with people who are just only looking at it one way, like, you know, your bar buddies from Milwaukee that don't really play like other mind games and things, they're all going to be thinking about it one way, whereas poker players are trying to, you know, conglomerate together and figure out ways that they can beat the game.
It's a totally different, right, contest. With your example, Philadelphia beating the Bears, and they were, what, I think on the money line, like 75% to win the game before it started. And also, what if the Ravens don't lose their mind on Thanksgiving night and they say, we're just going to force feed Henry the ball, and they walk out of there with a 10-point win against Cincinnati? Then we're talking about, what was it, like 800 people still left moving beyond Thanksgiving?
Right, exactly. I mean, everybody wants to take a small sample size and then extrapolate that out and make grand gestures. I mean, it's just like the same thing that's going to happen with these football games. I mean, based on what happens in a key moment in one game, it's the legacy of Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Bo Nix, like whatever. They all get changed based on a singular moment. But that doesn't mean that that's always going to be the outcome. Poker players are good at understanding that things happen a percentage of the time. Just because you put all your chips in with 6-5 of hearts and I put them in with aces and it wins doesn't mean that 6-5 is always going to win. I mean, we're going to play that out, and I'm going to win with aces more often than you're going to win with 6-5. It's just the same thing in football and contests and things like that. And I think we get a little fixated on the results and not necessarily the variable outcomes that may or may not occur throughout a season.
Good answer. If you recall, last year, 2024, all the carnage was early. This year, the carnage was late, and specifically on Thanksgiving. A couple of minutes left here. How is the poker going right now?
Yeah, poker's going great. I decided to step up my game a little bit, and I decided to tangle with the true titans of our game, and I played a series of $10,000 no limit tournaments at the Poker Go Studio, the Poker Go Tour, as it's called, and came out on top there. I finished second in two of the five events, which is pretty darn good. Took home a nice little about $400K and cashes, and so that was fun. And it's always good to challenge yourself. You know, I mean, I didn't necessarily go in with expectations. I mean, I play a lot, but, you know, when you go in there and you're playing the biggest buy-ins versus the best players, you don't always, you know, find your success. Doesn't necessarily mean, just like in the example I used, that I'm, you know, going to do that again. But yeah, it's been fun out there battling. I'm going to go play more Poker Go Tour events. If you want to challenge yourself in poker, Poker Go Tour at the Aria Poker Studios is a great place to go out there and do that. So, I've been having fun in the poker streets and the football streets, and I got to find something to keep myself busy after these next couple weeks. No more football.
I know. Sad.
Great job.
You can follow David on X at @AUDavidB. Podcast is called Gamble Up as well, wherever you get your podcast. David, pleasure. Thanks so much for the time. Love talking to you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you guys. And yeah, please like, subscribe, view, listen to Gamble Up Pod on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, all those things out there, just putting out nice content for you guys.
Enjoy the games this weekend. David Baker there on the progressive guest line. All right, so he's still okay with the Broncos, and maybe not so much with the Rams going into the weekend with those futures.
Well, the thing, I don't like when these the coordinators are interviewing while they're getting ready for a game. I mean, look how bad Denver was last week, and Joseph's talking, Shula's talking to people.
Yep. Transfer portal rankings, odds for next year's national title game, and it'll be the first time in the history of the sport for this to occur.